Oh, this one is more, this one was more like a bunch of, it looks like people extras from a K-pop video. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
That was a great pregnant pause right there.
I like to let it hang a little bit.
We're expecting the podcast.
Get a moment there.
So, before we get to talking about anything in particular, I wanted to let you know that we had a throwback movie weekend in my house.
What did you watch?
We watched three movies from this from similar era in movie time. And of course, for me, the most important time in movies is the early 80s. Like, this is where... For
this
me,
because of your age,
yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah. No, these are the movies that shaped me.
Blade Runner,
when they came
Raiders.
Out. Blade Runner, Star Wars.
Brazil?
Brazil, no, Brazil's 84, 85.
Okay.
A little bit later. Okay. So those early 80s action, cool, fun movies. Anyway, so we watched Rambo First Blood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
I've never seen that.
Okay.
I have a lot of Stallone holes, actually. I've never seen
First Blood.
Rocky.
First Blood's amazing. And it was lovely to see all three of these. So just in order, we saw Rambo First Blood. Then we watched Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, that's a fabulous
and
movie.
Then we watched 48 Hours.
I've never seen 48 Hours.
Yeah, those are all great.
So the First Blood is incredible. When you watch old movies like from the 70s, one of the things that I find surprising is, geez, and crow, we're like 30 minutes in and I don't know what this movie's about yet. Like, they really take their time, the pacing. I mean, Rocky, amazing movie, but it crawls along as far as narratively.
A different type of audience.
Yes.
When did that change? Like mid-80s MTV?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know the exact answer. But here's the thing about Rambo First Blood is it feels totally modern.
It just jumped. Maybe that's the one that changed it.
He's a drifter. He's walking. He runs into the bad sheriff within 5 minutes. And things are rolling within 10.
Is First Blood the first Rambo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, with Brian Dennehy as the villain sheriff.
Oh, man. I love Brian Dennehy.
Brian Dennehy's character actor.
And a baby David Caruso as like the fresh young cop.
This must be before Jade and everything.
Oh, God. No.
He must have been like 17.
This is like 81.
Oh, wow.
So then we watched Beverly Hills Cop, and I was trying to tell the boys who love Eddie Murphy. They've watched Delirious.
How do they love Eddie Murphy? Okay.
I showed them Delirious a few years ago.
Delirious is a little bit.
Yeah, no, I know.
It has not aged favorably for Eddie Murphy. And Raw is much, much worse.
No, I know. In terms of politically incorrect humor, it is off the charts.
Yeah, he didn't like gay people much at all.
No. It's awful. That is awful. At the same time, his comedic constructions, it's almost like he arrives fully formed as a stand-up. I mean, just as an ability to tell a story. The stuff that's not crossing all those
The ice
lines.
Cream truck bit from Delirious is one of the all-time
funniest. The shoe throwing.
It's all that.
Holy crap. It's just like, I can't even breathe.
Yeah.
But they didn't realize that was part of what made him a star. But then you had movies like Trading Places, which they'd seen, but 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop. Beverly Hills Cop is astoundingly wonderful.
48 Hours is Nick Nolte, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that. Okay. It is a delightful film.
My best friend in high school and I used to just call each other up all the time and go, I'm not coming home tonight. I don't know when I will.
Some of those movies just blend.
Beverly Hills Cop is like, you have Judge Reinhold on one side playing perfect straight man.
Who looks like a baby, like his giant eyes and his,
Before Gremlins?
Like a literal baby. I believe he's not in Gremlins.
Yeah, Judge Reinhold.
Is he?
He plays the jerk best friend banker.
Oh.
The son
of
a banker.
Maybe it's not Judge Reinhold. Maybe it's Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson?
I don't know. I always get
Breakfast
these people
Club?
With... Judd Nelson was in Breakfast Club, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Judge Reinhold
was in Fast Times in Ridgemont High. Yep.
Right, he played the pirate secret sauce guy.
Loved Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
Phoebe Cates, yeah.
Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe Cates.
That's terrible.
That's what we always used to say. It's not for lack of Phoebe Cates love, because I love her. She's awesome.
Also in Gremlins.
Okay, so what stands out on Beverly Hills Cop is the first one without Sylvester Stallone's wife Bridget, former ex-wife Bridget Nielsen.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes. So it's lovely to see a movie where they're not sure if it's going to be a giant or not. right? Because Beverly Hills Cop 2 suffers, from what I remember, suffers from, like, this is going to be even bigger. Mm.
I watched, like, that, and it's charmingly even bigger.
It's like Lethal Weapon. There's an earnestness in the first one.
Exactly. And Beverly Hills Cop has exactly that. Eddie Murphy is incredibly magnetic, but also the movie is able to pivot between serious drama and hilarious comedy on a dime. Interesting cameo. Jonathan Banks plays Victor Maitland's henchman.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Eddie Murphy throws him over the buffet. I remember that.
Yeah.
That's Banks.
Huh.
Wow. The villain is good and scary. The movie is very light from a plotting standpoint, but it doesn't matter. Murphy's like, you know, he can go from like the ha ha, you know, to the I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Really well, really amazing. 48 Hours has the worst racial and sexual politics of a movie I've seen in a while.
Like,
Nick Nolte spends the movie calling Eddie Murphy every racial epithet that there is.
It's like the John Pryor free association skit from SNL in 76 made into a feature length film.
It's terrifying. And you're watching and you realize Julia was like, my wife was like, they wouldn't do that today. And I said, no, they would do that, but they'd make you could see in the screenwriter's head, I think, of 48 Hours that he's like, oh, well, Nick's an old racist cop. And he turns around and realizes that Eddie's great. That's the arc. But today it'd be like, he can't call him watermelon without him suffering later for some reason. And that is the least awful of the things he calls Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
It's literally, we're in the living room going, whoa, hey. And then also there's like women. And I think there's like seven women that you see on screen in 48 Hours. And at least five of them show up topless.
And how many of them have names?
Maybe two.
Yeah.
There's that going on.
So what started this? Why did you just have this theme movie night?
I keep an Evernote list of movies the boys haven't seen as part of their film education. And this had been a category I had known was going to hit pay dirt, right? Like, First Blood was just on this list for a long time, and I decided to crack the seal. We watched it on Friday night, and then Saturday, I was like, let's stay in this genre. Let's stay in this zone of
it's like wine pairings.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really nice. This is like your old YouTube DJ idea.
Yeah, you just curate and watch the reactions.
Yeah. It was great. First Blood is remarkable how modern it feels and how much you realize it invented huge swaths of the action genre. Up to and including Stallone at the end, literally in that movie, he has the bullets belts crossed over his chest.
Well, that came from Magnificent Seven or Fistful of Dollars or something. Like, that was a Western trope.
I realized that. But Stallone bringing it into the modern super over the top finish where he basically destroys a whole town single handedly.
Like with an M60 in each
hand. With an M60 in one hand, he's shooting out Transformers. My son's girlfriend was like, are there any more of these?
There are a lot of them. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, all the way to the very end.
Well, I mean, that whole kind of movie kind of peaked and died with what, Eraser or something like that in the late 80s?
Yeah.
For a long time.
I haven't researched enough to think about, to see if I have an opinion about where the action movie got quick and to the point where, you know, all of those things that started to happen. It was really fascinating.
Well, and we're far enough along now that we've reached like the postmodern version of that, where they're meta and they're self-aware and they...
The other guys and all the rock movies.
I mean, people don't realize that...
All the Fast and the Furious movies, really.
I don't know if the people realize this. Stallone wrote Rocky and invented that genre of triumph over adversity film. And to be clear, he wrote it and kept on peddling it around knowing it would be his vehicle and turned down $1 million to sell the script without him attached.
Wow.
Because he knew it was his vehicle.
So it was
made Rudy also, to be fair.
But Rudy's way after. Rudy is years after and based totally, I mean.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Rudy's great.
Rudy, the Notre Dame football game with Sean Elliott?
Yeah. Triumphed over adversity, Sean Astin.
Sean Astin.
Yeah. Did you see, you named
Sean
those three
Astin,
movies.
John Astin's son, John Astin, who played Gomez on
Gomer Pyle?
No.
Gomez on the Addams Family.
I know that.
Oh, that's the father of Sean Astin. Wow. Yeah.
I got to see The Other Guys because those movies just make me want to watch The Other Guys, which is Shane Black's movie.
It's
and he,
great.
You know, he created those genres in the 80s.
Yes.
And he's come full circle. So.
Well, and we've talked about Long Kiss Goodnight on the podcast. Mm-hmm. That is
we haven't talked about that on the podcast,
really?
I don't think.
Shane Black's Long Kiss Goodnight is one of my all-time favorite action movies.
Is that the Remy, that's the
Remy Harlan,
and
Gina Davis, Samuel Jackson,
Island.
David yeah. Morse.
Yeah, that's a good film.
Craig Bierko. Unbelievable film. It still holds up. So all three of those movies hold up. All three of the movies I watched this weekend hold up really well.
So what's next on that list for you?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
You know, do you remember?
Did you jump forward to like Arnie stuff, like Predator and stuff like that? Or
you probably should watch some early Arnie because they're huge fans of the Terminator franchise.
Or Cobra is the other way to go.
God, I don't think I don't think I've Commando. Ever seen Cobra. Or if I did it, oh, Cobra is crime is a disease. This is the cure. That's Stallone, right?
Yeah, it's Stallone.
Glasses.
I can't.
Oh, yeah.
I have watched so much Archer at this point that I can't tell if Cobra is good.
Right.
I can't remember. I don't think it's good, but he has a really huge, like, Clint Eastwood. You can watch Dirty Harry.
Do you want to know what peak Stallone is? This has to be Over the Top.
The climbing movie? No, Cliffhanger.
That's Cliffhanger. Cliffhanger's great.
Cliffhanger. Man, that has... Talk about a movie that does not open slow.
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
Here's,
no,
here's how we open.
And his name is Rockstar because he's a rock climber. But Over the Top is Sylvester Stallone's Rocky type of movie, except the sport that they're battling in is... arm wrestling.
Oh, right. I've seen
this. They're 18-wheeler drivers.
I've seen this.
Oh, yeah. And you know that he's about to get in the zone, quote unquote, when he turns his baseball cap backwards.
Shoot. And the climactic scene has like metal spikes on each side of the arm wrestling.
Maybe. I don't even remember. Yeah. I was a projectionist for that movie, and I don't remember much of it.
Wow. It's like, remember in Winter Soldier when, in the beginning, Sam Wilson, the Falcon, meets Captain America and gives him like, oh, you got to listen to these songs.
Oh, yeah.
And he has that notebook.
Yeah.
And you get one page of the notebook. I want to know what's on the other pages.
Well, so do you know about that notebook? What was on the pages of that notebook changed depending on the market they showed.
Really?
Really?
Yes. Oh, you got to look it up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did it in different countries. They had different things on the list.
There's got to be like a Tumblr out there.
So like in
Captain America, Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Ketchup notebook.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we're going to change topics, we need to shift gears. This is the time for it to happen.
I think it's time to shift gears, but I'm sure in this thread we'll get some suggestions for other movies, other arcs of the action movie to pay attention to, and I'd love to hear the suggestions.
And hear them as pairings.
Yeah.
Two or three.
It's really great.
Yeah. More 80s action movies, man.
Hey, so a couple weeks ago.
And I'm still into this. Did we mention this on the podcast or did we only talk about it in IRL? The Carl Urban Film Festival?
Oh, yeah, we did. We mentioned it on the podcast.
It was a good idea. I have further developments.
I want to do this.
I have a way to fund that now.
Okay, you have a way to fund it. I met Carl at the Paramount.
So you have Carl.
We corresponded. He's
we have a
the
theater
show.
Here that we
have
can
a theater
we have a relationship.
Here. I think we have everything we need to potentially initiate a Carl Urban.
We need our fans to go come and tell.
Well, so he was Eowyn.
Dread, obviously.
There's Dread, but then he's in Lord of the Rings. He's in the Two Towers.
I don't think I want to watch all of Lord of the Rings again.
You got to.
Oh, man.
Born Supremacy
is definitely villain. I would watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Trek.
Then Trek is
the 2009 one, probably, right?
It's very entertaining in the event. And you'll attest to this. He's a Kiwi, so he's there talking in his Kiwi accent, and then every now and then he just jumps into bones, and he's like got the big bone. I mean, the perfect accent. It's amazing.
He's
Comic-Con sounds terrible. I can't wait.
My favorite part of the whole anyway, my favorite part of Carl Urban of Star Trek is Carl Urban as Bones because he's more DeForest Kelly than DeForest Kelly.
It's really amazing. Yeah. And with all the charm and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's everything. Yeah.
That was the main thing I kept on sort of redounding to and asking those three guys questions. Like, how do you take an iconic character and both make it consistent so that you satisfy the fans of the franchise and also your own? And satisfying as an actor.
It's
and,
called acting.
Well, they all found it. They all found it. And it's a really amazing achievement.
And they all found it different ways because the source weren't there. Like DeForest Kelly had passed away. You know, Zachary Quinto had a great friendship with Leonard Nimoy. And, you know, Chris Pine had to do it on his own.
I think he probably watched a lot of all the original series episodes.
And Pine did it his own, I mean, with just a wonderful amount of swagger. I love his Kirk.
Yeah.
The thing that they did is they did it without making it karaoke, right?
Right.
That, like that was right. The danger is that it would be really easy to go out and do Kirk Spock Bones karaoke.
He did it with, I feel like the two things he grabbed were the swagger and the bedroom eyes. Right. There's a way in which.
That's the smile. Yeah. There's a smile. Yeah. There's a
little bit of a.
Yeah, I know what's going to happen now. The turbolift doors are going to close and we're going to go downstairs.
If you know what I mean.
Below decks.
That week that we went down to the Paramount lot was a pretty big week also for you.
Is this your transition?
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, yes.
It was an okay segue, Norm. That was like 7.5
we need to get there somewhere.
We need, yeah.
And we didn't talk about it last week.
One of my heroes came to San Francisco, and we got to spend some time with him. His name is Theo Janssen, and he is the inventor, creator, father of the Strandbeest, which are the multi-legged walking robots that I'm obsessed with.
One?
I have the whole shelf here behind me. Hold on. Yeah, I'll grab it.
Okay.
Yeah, so to set it up, right now at the Exploratorium Museum in San Francisco, there is an exhibit with Strandbeest, many of them extinct Strandbeest from Theo's collection. He's been making these for over 25 years.
Wow, really?
And
yeah.
The story of how he came up with them is fascinating because he was a physicist.
Building computer algorithms to take a look at walking.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
Evolutionary algorithms, because he is fascinated with the idea of evolution.
He is, and he thinks about them as evolving, so that they have skeletal structures and they have lungs and organs. In fact, many of them are wind-powered, not directly, but indirectly. So the wind actually builds pressure within a chamber built into it that he calls a wind stomach.
Mm-hmm. Soda bottles.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, so the neat thing about the way Strandbeest work is you can make them walk by just pushing them, right?
You can make them walk by just pushing them, but he puts them on the beach and uses sails that are adjustable in terms of their profile to let them walk down the beach. And so he did this at the beach at Chrissy Field.
But like when he like this one that's in front of us, the demo one, which is one of the ones from one of the Japanese
model kits,
like this one has a wind powering a drivetrain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a crankshaft in the middle, and this model actually that we have on the table here was inspired by, I think, the large metal or wooden one that he built, not out of PVC piping.
I think the one he built is out of cardboard.
Cardboard.
Tubes?
Yes, mm-hmm. That has this shape. Yeah. Yeah, flat cardboard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful, and it feels like an elephant watching it move.
But you got to see one walking on the beach in person.
I did.
We did get it on video. It'll be out in a week or so, but... How was that experience for you?
It was stunning.
Had you'd never seen a big one in person before?
I'd never seen any of them in person. I've got a little tiny strut of one up there in my collection that someone sent me from Theo's crew. But seeing it move is genuinely altering. It's really lovely.
They had at Maker Faire like a four leg wide segment in the Exploratorium booth. They were just pushing back and forth.
Yeah,
and even that was transfixing.
Right,
like my 3-year-old sat there and just we were just sitting there looking at. She's like, "This really cool, Dad."
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I got to see some things close up that are really sort of critical. So I'm building a Strandbeest. So we've talked about this.
We haven't made a formal announcement. People have been talking about, we can do it now. We can totally make the announcement.
Let's make this announcement. So the reason Theo is in town is because he's got a huge exhibit up at the Exploratorium, which you should go see. It's amazing. It is the perfect museum to bring him. This is a show that's been touring around the United States. It was in Boston. Was it in Chicago?
It was in Chicago second. And this is the only West Coast stop.
Oh, really? So here, either Portland or Seattle or LA.
Yeah, here so through Labor Day.
Suck it, guys.
If you want to see it, you got to come to San Francisco. And as part of the exhibit in early July, I am going to do an outdoor live 3-day build of my own Strandbeest at the Exploratorium.
In residency.
Oh, that's awesome.
In residency, yes. It's my first artist.
Where are they going to do it?
I'm not...
Well, there's a workshop area, so I think part of it will be there.
Okay. I'm going to set up a little shop, and I have a design.
We will be filming this as well.
I assume it's one of those things that, like, you build one set of legs, and then you just replicate that 7 or 8 times, right?
A lot of repetition. There are some critical mechanical things going on that... Oh, so the second part is that Theo came here for lunch a couple days later.
Well,
we spent
awesome.
A couple of hours here talking story and talking about stuff. And I showed him my design. I showed him my drawings. I showed him what I'm building it out of. And he gave me a couple of really critical pieces of information about how the feet work that is really cool.
Oh.
Yeah. The feet are totally critical to the functioning of a large strong beast in terms of how they sit and how much play there is in them. And it's actually the view from the side of a strong beast walking is like intoxicating. But from the back where you get to watch the feet, they do this little sort of kick. That is feels almost like a Charlie Chaplin move.
Go ahead, Norm.
No, so many people, when we talk about strong bass, we associate it with one, the PVC material, and two, the linkage system, because that's his invention in 1991. But it's much more than just those 13 numbers and the linkage system now.
Oh, there's a whole central framework that has to be incredibly rigid. He talked to me about that. Like, if you're going to make it weight-bearing, the rigidity is really vital, because if it can adjust, you'll have problems that won't be obvious in terms of the necessary
solution.
Like
a little skitter sideways or something?
Yeah, I don't even know. Ahead? But he's okay. So he has a long-term experience with ways in which these fail, because he's made a lot that don't work. I'm very excited about building this. I've always wanted to make one. It's going to be human-powered, mine.
Cool.
Yes.
Don't give away more than
that's
that.
That's it.
I'm interested. It's neat to me because he originally built them and they walked on the sand, which is a completely different footing than when they're walking on asphalt or any of the other places that he's run them now.
Yes.
So
all of their design is informed by the environments. So he sees them as migration animals that were conceived as to defend the beaches of his homeland from the rising tides.
Well, I mean,
I asked if any of them ever get away, if they get into the water. And he's like, the waves are really good at pushing them back.
Wow. And he has systems now to detect whether they have entered the water.
Right, right, right.
And then they will then expend the energy to run away from the wave.
Wow. So I found a couple things really surprising. One is he uses a kind of PVC which is not readily available in the U.S. It's a narrower gauge and a narrower... it's much smaller.
It looks almost like bamboo, like the kind of bamboo that they make... lattice. It's the same size as that they make scaffolding out of in the East.
Yeah,
and it's infrastructure PVC because it's in his country. It's where they wrapped all the wires in all the houses.
Oh, really?
All the internal wiring
goes through
that.
We don't do that here.
That makes sense, right? Doesn't look pressure bearing.
He's Dutch, right?
Dutch, yeah.
So he. I didn't realize this. I thought that the strong bases were all yellow because they had spent a lot of time in the sun. No, they actually arrive from the manufacturer, yellow. He calls them, he's like, yeah, I built them all out of cheese-colored tube.
Cheese.
Cheese-colored tube.
Yes.
But over long exposure in the sunlight, they turn white and they become, as he says, as Norm said earlier, extinct. They are skeletons.
And you can not, quote-unquote, carbon date them based on the discoloration from yellow to white. And so all the extinct ones he calls fossils, the pieces.
Right. Wow.
So say, oh, white color. Oh, this was made in 95.
And does he just leave them on the beach?
No.
Okay.
No, but he's got a studio on the beach that takes a while to get to. He said, you know, he's traveling around a ton.
Yeah.
He said that when he gets back, he'll spend 2.5 months just alone on the beach working.
He's kind of having a moment as artist.
Really?
I mean, it seems like it's one of those things. Like there's some things over the years that you've introduced us to, or that we've introduced you to on occasion, but more often the other way, that then starts to pop up. And I've been seeing more friends that aren't associated with us talking about strong bass.
Yeah, no, me too. And that's what I get really excited. I've also, it was fascinating getting his take on them. He's incredibly generous with information and talking about it. He's clearly loves them. It's just, it's lovely. It was lovely to spend some time with him, and to see them on the beach just felt like
that's
a
awesome.
Literal once in a lifetime kind of moment.
It was really cool to see the reaction of people to even the small chunk of one that they had at Maker Faire.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time Strong Beast inspired design has been at Maker Faire. Cause
no,
we interviewed somebody last year or the year before that built like Burning Man walking houses used a Strong Beast locomotion thing.
Yeah, that design is all public.
Right. And I was actually a little nervous when I decided to make mine out of steel if he would approve. Right. I wanted it to feel. Oh, I'm giving away more. I wanted to feel like it was within a canon of materials. Right. Because I feel like if it was all laser cut carbon fiber, that somehow isn't. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The beauty of seeing them made out of PVC is that part of what you're watching is the machine is triumphing over its own
wiggliness.
Wiggliness, yeah. The material is imperfect.
Yeah.
But he loves those the limitations the material imposes and feels that the product he gets out of those limitations is better than what he would get with any other material. Mm-hmm. So he's in that. And look, having been an assistant to a machine artist, I understand exactly that relationship of the triumph of the machine over its own problems with locomotion. I
mean, it's applicable to any material, yeah. But he's just working with a specific type of constraints.
Exactly. But he's totally excited about everybody making Strandbase.
Like, oh, that's awesome.
Whether they're wood, the beautiful Japanese shoes that have Strandbase locomotion.
The 3D printed ones. Yeah. He sees it as the viral, the meme nature of it.
Exactly.
These are how they self-propagate.
We at some point we should do an episode about pieces of art that exist because of the limitations and talk about this and Jaws and all because it, like there's an interesting talking to a lot of creative people lately.
Yeah,
the most common question that I get is what are the limitations of the thing that I'm doing for them, because they get excited about that. It gives them a different set of constraints than they're accustomed to, and it forces them to approach things in different ways, which is something that I had always understood like conceptually, but didn't really appreciate up front. And thinking about how the PVC works with the Strandbase it's interesting.
Got a sneeze.
Gesundheit.
No, it's not happening.
It went to you. Where do they go? Where do Robbed. sneeze go?
I know. Cool.
Limitations are a massive thing. You want to read about amazing limitations. Read about the circumstances under which Coppola directed The Godfather.
Or Apocalypse Now.
Right. But Apocalypse Now is a different set of difficulties.
Yeah.
Really. And self-created and admittedly admitted by Coppola as self-created. Godfather, the studio didn't like him as the director. His first AD was ready to replace him any given day that they were filming.
Wow.
It was under the worst duress and the product that you get. And you mentioning Jaws, one of my all-time favorites, like Shark didn't work. New way of making monster movies gets invented by accident.
Yeah.
Gets invented by necessity. There's a quote that came about at this year's TED, which has been around for years, but the quote is something along the lines of, to make something truly great, you need an excellent plan and not quite enough time.
That seems exactly right.
Some limitation.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah, every Strandbase is a failure of his original plan, and that is the success.
Right.
I can't wait to watch the video, guys.
It's going
to
be awesome.
So that'll do it for us this week, Norm.
I think so.
Strandbase coming up.
Yes,
on the site
we
this
had
week.
Some of those videos. We are moving offices. Thank you to everyone who came by our big office garage sale. I think we had 250 people come by. It was great to see everyone, and it'll help with our impending move.
I saw the dog in the backpack.
Yeah,
that made me
three
smile.
Dogs. It was wonderful.
Dog in the backpack.
Someone came with a Shiba Inu in a backpack.
Oh,
yeah. Very chill dog.
Very chill. Or did it have legs? Or maybe it was a legless dog.
No, it was
the C-3PO of dogs. Oh. Sorry, too soon. See you guys next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.